98.3 Nigeria, incredibly very lovely morning to you, Lagos, Nigeria. Welcome to the last 1 hour of the show we call The Morning Crossfire. We're streaming live on Facebook and on YouTube right now. In case you'd like to watch, please go on there and watch live on those two platforms. Just search for Nigeria, Info 99.3, and you'll be able to watch us live. It's Health Thursday. Every Thursday, we come in here and we discuss health and health-related matters. For some weeks now, we've been dwelling on brain drain in the health sector, and it's been quite riveting. It's been quite deep as well, and thought-provoking. If you'd like to join in, if you are a player in that sector, feel free to listen up and maybe chime in when it's time to hear your thought. I'm Sheriff Quadri. Welcome aboard. This morning, we'll have joining us on the show Dr. Alera Roberts, Second Vice Chairman, Association of Public Health Physicians of Nigeria, Lagos Chapter. She's right here with us in the studio this morning. Dr. Roberts, good morning to you.
Morning, Sheriff. Nice to have you.
It's good to have you here. Yes. And I also have joining us for the first time, Dr. Tokunbo Shitabe, Chief Executive Officer of Dutchess International Hospital, Lagos here. He's here with us in the studio as well. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Sheriff. Thank you for agreeing to tolerate me this morning.
Well, in case you're wondering, Dutchess International Hospital is where the Vice President, Professor Yemi Osinbajo, Senior Advocate, was admitted, especially when he wanted to get some things done on his right femur fracture. That was on July 16, right? Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
How did it go?
Well, you appear to be the authority on that now. We are simply spectating.
How did it go?
It went well. I think we must accept the patient's viewpoint on that.
Yes.
Yes, it went very well.
And quite a number of people usually believe that the elites, whenever they want to get treatment for anything, the simplest of it all could even be, well, like it will be speculated in the public space, headache. They go outside the shores of the country. Did you expect that?
Well, to be honest, not from our vice president. It didn't come to me as a surprise that he decided to stay in this country and seek help at a hospital like the Dutchess International Hospital. I think it says a lot for leadership, or what the picture of leadership should be. And he's a national treasure. We're all very proud of the decision he's made, and we only hope that at the Dutchess we were able to serve him correctly.
Well, that's a good thing. We hope that we get more of that happening, where our elites can have trust and belief in our system here. Dr. Roberts, now let's dive in. I'm going to start with where we left off the last time. Has anything changed? I was reading what the NMA said at their executive council in Gombe, that we now have 1 to 5,000, the doctor-patient ratio.
No, I think that's a little optimistic. I think it's 1 to 6,000 and growing.
Oh.
Because, yes, nothing has changed, and a lot has changed since last we spoke. Mm. One of the things that has not changed is the utter and complete silence from the administration when it concerns many of the issues that have been raised, which are not new issues. Mm. These are things that have been ongoing for almost decades now. So, you know, this administration has been probably the worst in terms of the utter and complete disregard for the lives and property of Nigerians. And this is just shown in what we've seen since. I mean, for Dr. Ojima to come out and say, even hint at the possibility of a strike. I mean, the NMA has for a long time assumed the position of peacemaker and kingmaker and, you know, paternalistic framework in terms of addressing the conflicts in the health sector. So for him to even come out and say it, I mean, if you meet him as a man and as a person, you realize that he's an extremely, you know, down-to-earth and pragmatic person who doesn't believe in unnecessary conflict and controversy.
Right.
So there must be some serious issues, which we all know about, of course, that would have caused him to say that. Yeah. And I think it's actually unconscionable that on the top of the list, pay the hazard allowance you agreed to pay.
Mm.
How difficult can that be?
Since last year.
There you go. Mm. I mean, we're 9 months in and it hasn't been paid. And the government has agreed. We accepted what they offered. We wanted a lot more. But we accepted what they offered. Okay, pay what you offered.
Well, Shitabe, let me come to you about some of the issues that have been raised. How do you suppose that the government tackled this effectively? Because we're losing doctors, like almost every week, doctors are young doctors are going out. How do you suppose government can tackle this head on?
Well, yes, I think our responsibility as healthcare providers is to, yes, do precisely that, to suggest ways in which government is able to tackle this and what our responsibility is as healthcare providers as well. I think it's time, really, for us to begin to think in a very innovative manner about how we recruit doctors. Okay, and also how we ensure that we encourage them to both stay in this country as well as return to this country to give of their best. I know for a fact that it is in the heart and soul of most people who are trained as healthcare practitioners in this country to give to the system. What I will say is that the thrust and the direction of policy really needs to bend in the direction of encouraging people to return. As well as to stay and give of their best. There are also things like, you know, thinking about how we recruit, because we need to think long-term as well. As basic as how we get people into medical school to begin with. I know for a fact that starting this year in the UK NHS, they are introducing an apprenticeship scheme. Okay. So quite apart from your 3A stars or 3As at A level, which is great, they're also encouraging others to come into medical school, learn the craft, train, study, and be paid as they are going through. That is acknowledging the fact that, one, essentially, the further you go into training, the more an apprenticeship it is. And also the fact that they are losing doctors in the UK as well, one way or another.
Oh, really?
And they need to, well, people are aging and retiring as well. And it's policy, really. They need to encourage people to come in and they need to change the way the doctors are trained, thinking 10, 15, 20 years in advance. So it's that sort of long-range thinking that I would encourage without prescribing specifically anything that might veer into the political. That is not our job and our duty as healthcare providers, but I would really encourage the government and everyone who is at the helm of influencing policy to think about the now and think long range.
Let's take it from now, Dr. Shitabe. So quite a number of our young doctors are leaving,
yes.
Even some consultants are leaving as well. How can we slow down the pace of the exodus?
Okay, well, yes, it is an exodus. I call it a hemorrhage quite a lot of the time. I think we really need to go back and focus on what's happening in our healthcare system. Why are people leaving the country? Doctors who are trained, healthcare professionals who are trained to give, very much the same reason that patients are also electing to go abroad. So the key issue is largely trust in the system. There's a crisis of trust in the system. We need to invest in our healthcare system. Doctors, healthcare professionals who are trained in this country expect to practice in an environment that enables them to give of their best. So it's things like ensuring that we invest in the process, invest in good governance, proper infrastructure for the healthcare system to draw upon, good proper remuneration for healthcare practitioners. Think about how they are paid, how they are taxed, the environment in which they work. All of those things are going to be really important in helping them to make the decision to stay in this country.
Indeed. If you're just joining us, you're welcome. You can watch on Facebook and on YouTube, Nigeria Info 99.3. Dr. Roberts, let me talk to you about what the federal government said some hours ago, let's put it that way, advising young doctors that the grass is not greener out there.
That, in a way, is true.
Yeah.
That, in a way, is true. I mean, I've always been brought up to believe that the perspective of how green the grass is on the other side of the fence, it depends on the angle at which you're looking at it. But when you do get to the other side of the fence, you suddenly realize that, hang on a minute, now that I'm looking at the same perspective, the grass was just as green on my side of the fence. But as people are getting out there and realizing that actually they do make a lot of money. So let's put a fictitious number to it. They make in the range of about, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Tooks, £4,000 a month?
That is not fictitious at all.
So it's a fair... So you make £4,000 a month and you think, times 720 naira, oh my word. However, for many of us who had the opportunity to be there and chose to stay here, what they do not tell you is that your bills, taxes, and other outgoings amount to about £3,999.
Oh, no way. No way.
Absolutely.
Possibly more.
First of all, you're taxed, what, 60p on the pound as a physician? Oh, yes, sir.
Oh.
So these are the parts that they don't tell you, because this is something that we as Nigerians don't resonate with. We are not taxpayers. I mean, you pay tax if you want a tax certificate to do something. So we're not taxpayers. We, you know, because we are largely our own local governments, we don't understand this constant bills, you know, concept. You know, I was talking to a young doctor who graduated. I had the privilege of supervising her project. So we chat. And of course, I chat to a lot of them like that. And she says, Dr. Roberts, I hate the sound of the letterbox in the morning, because all that's coming through are bills. And I was like, what did you expect? You know, and these are the parts that they don't see. Yeah. So they get out there and they realize that they're stuck, really, because now they're there, they've nixed their return tickets. They've accrued a debt from here trying to get out there, which now needs to be paid back. And they suddenly realize that they can't pay back in under a year, 2 years, sometimes even 5 years. And they're stuck there. And of course, I'm sorry, but for the British government, we are cheap labor.
We are indeed.
We are cheap labor. So they can pay our doctors significantly less than they would pay their doctors. Our doctors are also getting there older. So they are now being, you know, overseen by people who are significantly 7 to 10 years younger than they are. These are things that nobody says. So when they do get out there, trust me, a lot of them are looking for ways to come home. But you cannot come home to an existing debt. You cannot come home if you haven't got an option of decent accommodation, transport, schools for your children, and things like that. And this is what we are hoping to leverage on in attracting a brain gain.
Indeed. But Dr. Tokunbo, I want to pick it from where Dr. Roberts landed by the area of brain gain. And you've mentioned that as well. Like, how do we even begin to convince somebody? Like right now, come work. I mean, there are standard medical facilities. Duchess is there, and a couple of others are also there, you know, in Nigeria now. But how many are they? I mean, how many can inspire a doctor in the UK or in Canada, or, you know, Australia, or in America to come back home? Like, what can we dangle to say that come back home?
Yes.
And add value.
Okay, well, I'm not sure that there is much that you can dangle, actually. But I think it's how we look at the problem. I think fundamentally we have to accept, to begin with, that the governance and infrastructural environment is not optimal. It's not right. And then we need to begin to think in a very innovative manner about how we address this problem. And it is a problem. At the Duchess Hospital, what we do is this. We look at the problem and we say, well, there are people who are out there who are minded to return home. We don't say to them, you must come and give us 100% of your time. There are those who are minded to return fully, like me. And we have a few like that at the Duchess Hospital, and give 100% of their time. You have to be at the right stage in your life, in your career, to consider doing that. Okay. One has to accept that there are those who want to come back to varying degrees. okay? But it's ensuring that we enable them to return to whatever degree they want to return and contribute. Mm. And that requires a framework within the system that is organized, okay? Mm. So we have at the Duchess a solid cadre of consultants who are here,
okay,
in every major specialty. Okay. And then we're able to offer a breadth, a very wide range of sub-specialties as well, because what has happened over the last 20, 30 years is that Nigeria has actually exported an entire healthcare system abroad.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There was an article in The Lancet about 10, 15 years ago that said quite categorically that there are more practicing doctors of Nigerian origin in the UK, never mind the US, than there were even then presently in Nigeria.
Whoa.
Absolutely. And that was over a decade ago. So what we've done is that we've said, well, we'll create the systems. We can offer any and every subspecialty you can conceive of. Okay. And we have an arrangement with these consultants to allow them to come back and give. And they do it really joyfully. And we structure the clinics and the systems. They come and go. Mm. Okay. There are virtual consultations as well, okay, and we ensure that continuity of care between them and the patient and them and the consultants, specialists who are on the ground. That way we're able to offer a top-notch consultant-led service. So there are many ways in which you can do it. It's just getting the governance, the administration, the organization right.
Indeed. Let's take some calls in. But Dr. Robert, before we get to the calls, would you like to chime in on this same topic?
I think Dr. Tokes is being very, what's the word I'm looking for? Laying enough emphasis on those two words. Yes. Governance.
Absolutely.
Structure.
Yeah.
And throw in the third word, framework. So whether we like it or not, as Nigerians, and I'm speaking, I keep saying it to people, tired of talking to government, it's like talking to a brick wall. I'm talking to people. I'm a public health physician. My emphasis is on the people. We need to rise up and demand and work for and collect back those three things: governance, structure, framework. In Lagos State, and I make no bones about it, I can boast happily about Lagos State. I was in Lagos State before Lagos State became Lagos State. In Lagos State, it is what is working. Whether we like it or not, there's structure. One or two people have come in and tried to make it their own. They have not succeeded. And when you have structure, you will have better governance, because you will have people who are, you know, articulate enough and educated enough and literate enough to demand that sense of accountability.
Yeah.
You know, I love the way, wrong choice of words. But thinking back on that unfortunate incident of the building collapse in Uniru.
Right.
The number of citizens who had posted pictures to relevant government agencies that how come this building is being allowed to be built to this, then it all came down. Needless to say, the poor commissioner had no choice but to allow his resignation to be accepted. You know, that kind of
accountability,
that's the kind of citizens' action needs to literally take over this country. Because you cannot have 200 million Nigerians being led by less than 2 million people who have no idea of what is right or wrong.
The nation's number one talk station, 99.3, Nigeria Info Lagos. Thank you for being with us. We're broadcasting live from Etimia Crescent here in Victoria Island, Lagos, Nigeria. 8:35, going on 36 is the time for my studios here. This second part of the show would create room for engagement if you are in the health sector, either here or anywhere else in the world, and you're listening right now and you'd like to chime in on our conversation this morning. Feel free to call our Skype ID, Nigeria Info FM. That's how you can get on the show this morning, Nigeria Info FM. I have Dr. Tokunboshi Tabe of Duchess International Hospital here. And I also have Dr. Roberts on the show this morning. She is a regular now on the show. they are both here, and we've been discussing the health sector so far this morning. If you are here and you'd like to call in, feel free to call our number 0700 993 993 993. That single number has four separate numbers embedded in it, so if you're calling and other three people are calling at the same time, we can take those four calls at the same time. So be free to call 0700 993 993 993. We're going to start with Emmanuel Richard on Skype. After speaking with Emmanuel, then we'll go to the telephone. Emmanuel, hi. Good morning to you. Emmanuel, can you hear me?
Hello.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Hello. Good morning.
Yes, good morning to you, Emmanuel.
Yeah, I can hear you. My name is Emmanuel.
Why are you calling? Richard, that's my... Why are you calling from?
I'm calling from abroad. I'm living abroad.
Okay.
Yes. So I've listened to the conversation so far, and I think it's quite interesting. But there's certain things that I need to talk about, and quickly. The first one, yes, doctors are living abroad because of 20 years, I know. They are not well paid in Nigeria. And those people who we will live abroad, we know the challenges, tax, and so on and so forth, as a senior doctor. But she didn't give the complete information. Yes. One of the reasons why doctors are leaving, apart from the money, is because even the system they work cannot take care of them. If you're unfortunate and you have an MI, you are likely to die, Sheriff. If you have a myocardial infarction, even as we speak now, if anything happens to me, God forbid, if I'm in Nigeria and I have a myocardial infarction, ST elevation, if anything happens, I cannot be taken care of. No hospital, no public hospital have the capacity to perform a PCI. We all know this. So somebody should not come and say that, okay, that we have, people are not going to come back. Nobody's coming back for now. Honestly speaking, there's nothing like brain gain again. It's going to put, and another thing is the attitude of senior doctors on their younger colleagues during residency program. That is one of the things that pull them out of this country. They don't treat them fine. They know. His doctors know. Even she, Dr. Rodriguez, she's aware of that. That most younger doctors are disgruntled. They are not happy the way the young senior doctors treat them during the program. So they are going to a place where they feel safe. How many times have I been attacked by hoodlums? So are we saying that hoodlums attack me do that abroad? No. There are a lot of factors. Money is one. But let's not look at it as if, okay, Nigerian doctors are living because of money. Look, in July 2019, most of doctors, we went for a neck meeting. One of our doctors died there. We were there when the guy died. Why? Because the equipment that was supposed to be to sustain this child, this doctor, was dysfunctional. They had to go to the government house to bring a defibrillator before equipment came in. The guy died. This is not a story. This is exactly what happened. We have about 1,500 doctors there for a meeting, and this guy died. We have various specialty there. We have anesthetists. We have physicians. Everybody was there. We look at this guy just died in our presence because they are of the dysfunctional system. Money is part of it, but that's not the major.
It's not the main reason.
That's not the main. Okay. There are a lot of reasons. Yes, but money is not the main thing. Yes, I know people struggle to save. I know somebody who told me that he struggled in the UK. He can't even save up to £200, in a month. But his children are well taken good care of. If he has an emergency, he knows, he can be taken good
where
care
to
of.
Where to go? Yeah.
He knows where to go. And security is relatively okay.
Right.
But in Nigeria, look what's happening. Doctors are being kidnapped. Ransom are being demanded from people who don't have money. And then we are you feel unsafe. The factors are many.
Thank you, Emmanuel.
It is not only money.
Thank you. I think your point is well noted. Thank you so much for sharing that. Let me start with Dr. Roberts. You heard Emmanuel.
Oh yes, I did. And he's right. He's right. There are a lot of push factors.
It's your phone, yeah?
Yeah, I don't even know what to do.
Let me help.
You know, there are a lot of push factors for doctors to all healthcare personnel,
yeah,
all cadres of healthcare personnel to leave, you know, and he's right in a lot, in almost everything that he said. But, you know, to say that there's no brain gain is like saying that Nigeria won't survive. And unfortunately, we can't say that. We're not going to sit here and we're going to say that because we've gone through a lot worse than this. I mean, this is a country that went through a civil war. So we will get through this. And I know that, you know, with every administration, my husband and I had this discussion. It seems as if it can't get any worse. And then we get the next administration and, oh boy,
it goes deeper.
But I honestly feel that this time we have hit rock bottom. We have absolutely hit rock bottom. It really cannot get worse than this. It can stay as bad as this for longer, or we can start to make it better. But, you know, like I said off air, I can't blame government in totality. I also have to blame the people. We have allowed this to become like this, because every time we sort of say, listen, we don't like this, let's do something about it, you get this attitude of, not be my mother, don't go here, say Tisha, my mother die. And nobody wants to be in the forefront of what it's going to take to make a change. That has to stop.
Indeed. Let's take this call, then we'll further this conversation. Morning to you. I think we lost that call. Let's take another. Nigeria Info, good morning to you.
Hello, good morning, Sheikh.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, I like what the last caller said. I want to disagree with Dr. Robert, because when you say that Nigerian doctors that go abroad for greener pastures, that it's not all that green there. First, what is happening to our exchange rates? No matter the amount of money you earn here in Nigeria, it will be eroded by this bad economic system we are running. Secondly, I can't believe that you will say that somebody will earn £4,000 and pay £3,900 as tax. It is impossible. Please, let her do her fact check very well. Every Nigerian doctor that goes out there, give him 6 months, 1 year, he's better off, 100 times better off than when he was in Nigeria. I want her to answer this question. This issue of taxation, there's no Nigerian doctor that does not pay tax. So when you say that doctors pay heavy tax abroad and they will come back, they will not have enough to come back and put their children in good school, it's not true. Let her throw more light in this. Thank and God bless you.
Okay. Thank you too for calling. Dr. Roberts, just hold on. Let me have Dr. Shitabe weigh in on this. You've been there. You've worked there before.
Yes.
Would you like to say a thing or two?
Okay. I think it's really important to appreciate all of the factors that feed into this. The first thing that one does have to acknowledge is, yes, there is a better quality of life in the UK, simply because the infrastructure is there, there's good governance, there are services, and there is a properly organized society. On the other hand, that society is constructed in a particular way. The aspirational middle class is there really, yes, to aspire, but also to pay for the welfare state. The slight issue here is that when doctors go abroad, they are often, well, quite frankly, they're coming from a totally different environment. They don't have the full understanding of how to live in a system like the UK. So take, for example, a junior doctor is employed and they start earning. The truth is that they are on an income that is above, considerably, significantly above the average salary of most people in the UK. So they're mostly on 40% taxation after the band that ends at about 22,000 a year. The rest of the income is taxed at 40%. But then there are other taxes. There's taxation on food. There's the council tax. There is housing. The truth is that when doctors go abroad, quite a lot of the time, they're not fully aware of all the various points of taxation. But I think we need to balance that point. There, yes, is a better quality of life when you go abroad compared to what happens here. The truth is health follows a social gradient. If you are poor in Nigeria, you're more likely, by far more likely, to suffer adverse health outcomes. If a doctor is poor, quote unquote, in Nigeria, they're less likely to feel comfortable in their environment, and they will aspire for more. So this is not to blame doctors, healthcare professionals who are going abroad, but there needs to be a proper understanding of the system that one is going into. And that is where I think the balance of the argument is.
Okay, I'm going to take this message here from Samson. Samson on Facebook says, I'm a medical doctor, over 10 years graduation. I have a diploma in anesthesia, PhD in physiology. I also run a private hospital, but can't pay my bill. I'm not safe. I'm a sickness away from poverty. I'm going next year to the United States because of my children. Our government is not ready. That's a doctor traveling.
Well, that is
next year.
Well, I'm surprised he's waiting that long, because that has been the story of a lot of the doctors in residency training. That I've told you that story before, that corridor conversation that we had, where a doctor says, look, the cost of transporting my entire family to a certain place, to Canada, is lower than the school fees bill for two of my children in the school that I went to. You know, and when you are faced with those kind of catastrophic education bills, because you want your children to have the same opportunities that you had, like he said, doctors, we are most and generally in that middle class band. You know, when you want your children to have that same quality of education that you had, that got you to where you are today, you're not and you can't pay for it here, you are going to go abroad. And I can totally relate to the message where he says he's supremely well qualified. He's supremely well qualified, and he can't pay his bills. That is not a good place to be. So he will go, and as Dr. Tok said, he will enjoy a far better quality of life. I do hope he's ending up in Canada, where education for his children will be free, and it'll be quality education that will be free. But can you blame them for that? And he will put up with whatever he has to put up with in terms of tax to be paid. Because if you don't have to pay for certain services and opportunities and that quality of life, you don't mind coming home with barely a penny in your pocket once everything else is provided. Because I keep saying it, in the healthcare system, we didn't go into the healthcare system to get rich. To get rich, we're clever enough to know the businesses we need to be in. We went in there to ostensibly give back to the system, to help. Because that altruistic nature is inbuilt into our DNA. But in doing so, we need to be alive to help. We need to be comfortable enough to help. We need to have a good bed to sleep in. You know, we need to have safe transportation to and from work. We don't necessarily have to drive a gold-plated Rolls Royce, but we do need to have safe transportation to and from. We need to be sure our children are getting the equal opportunity, the opportunities, that educational opportunities that we want for them to have.
Let me speak with this caller on Skype. Hi, caller. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
My name is Benjamin. As a matter of fact, I arrived back and I came back to the UK on Tuesday, two days ago.
Okay.
I was in Nigeria for about 3 weeks.
Okay.
And I think it's a bit misleading what the doctor said. I don't know if it was, maybe she was just being dramatic, or she just wanted to pass a message across to people that is not really that green on the other side.
Okay.
But no one, I don't think anyone is paying that percentage of tax over here in the UK. Using myself as an example,
okay.
Weekly I think I earn about, I'm not a doctor anyway, I earn about 1,000 weekly.
Okay.
And after tax, I get about sometimes about 720, sometimes 730, depending on the number of hours I put in.
Okay.
So I don't think it's as bad as she put it.
Let me guess, you're a support worker?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I am. I work in mental health.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, my friend, for calling me. I think we need to break that down a little bit, Dr. Roberts. Okay, maybe I should come to you. Dr. Shitavi.
Hello.
Support worker, medical doctors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's evident from the evidence you've presented that you do not pay 99.9% in taxation. But okay, can I just talk to you a little bit about that. Do you work as a locum or are you employed?
It's gone. It's gone.
Oh.
It's not on online again. Yeah.
I see. It's gone. I see. Okay. I think the thing to say is, of course, there is no tax band that is 99%.
Of course.
But I think the general point, the broader point that perhaps Dr. Roberts was making, is that there are other stealth taxes and other forms of taxation that are real to the individual. There's the council tax, there's housing, there's food. We, in that sort of tax bracket, you would be aspirational. You would probably want your children to go to private school. Mm-hmm. And all of those things add up as expenses. Mm-hmm. But of course, we must nuance that point with the admission. We must accept that, as Dr. Roberts has said, even if you end up spending all of your money on all of those things, in exchange for a better quality of life, it still is by far more appealing than what currently obtains in this country.
Right.
I think that puts it very succinctly.
Mm-hmm. I think also that that's where we'll stop for this morning. Thank you so much, Dr. Adetoh Kumbosi-Tabe, Chief Executive Officer of Dutchess International Hospital, Lagos. Here, thank you so much, sir, for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Alera Roberts, Second Vice Chairman, Association of Public Health Practice Physicians of Nigeria, Lagos Chapter. Thank you so much, Dr. Roberts.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you. We'll continue to speak. We'll continue to raise awareness on the issue of brain drain in the health sector here in Nigeria, because it's very vital and we are on a delicate balance. Because if there are no physicians, I don't know what we're going to do, really. Thank you. I'm Sherif Kodri. I'll see you on Monday at 5 a.m. In the meantime, Daily Digest with Jimmy Lisu is next. Good morning to you.